Hello and welcome back to our class on physical chemistry of polymers. You're listening to its fifth lesson unit entitled Flory Exponent. In the last lesson unit, we have made the step from ideal to real chains. By accounting for two aspects we have ignored so far in the ideal chain scenario, namely that the monomer segments that constitute a real chain have a finite own covolume and have interactions. A quantitative treatment of both on the basis of an effective monomer-monomer interaction potential has led us to the concept of the excluded volume, according to which a certain portion of the volume inside of a coil is excluded for monomer segments to be occupied because already another one is occupying it and blocking a portion of it due to its repulsive interactions. This causes a necessity for the coil to expand if the excluded volume is larger than zero, which it is in the good and athermal solvent state. Today we want to tackle the question of how much exactly does such a real coil expand in these solvent situations. Our goal is to derive a scaling law expression for real chains, just as the one we already have for ideal chains. Let's start with a little semi-quantitative consideration. We can make ourselves clear by intuition already that the measure of size of a real coil, for example, its mean square end-to-end distance or its mean square radius of duration, must somehow differ from the one of an ideal coil. We mathematize that in the form of equation 3.4, where we model the root mean square radius of duration of a real coil to differ from the root mean square radius of duration from an ideal coil by a swelling factor alpha. This factor is equal than 1 in the theta state, because there the coil is pseudo-ideal. It's larger than 1 if the coil is expanded, which it is in the athermal or good solvent situation, and it's smaller than 1 if the coil is contracted, which it is in the bad or non-solvent situation. How severe is that expansion now? Let's consider a very simple example. We again consider the stereotype model polymer we have considered several times already, polyethylene, now in a very short variant composed of just 50 Kuhn segments, which have a Kuhn length each of the characteristic ratio times the actual monomer segmental length. The characteristic ratio for polyethylene we know already, that's about 6.9, and the actual monomer segmental length we also know already, that's the length of a carbon-carbon bond, it's 1.5 angstroms, or 0.15 nanometers. Together, this gives us a Kuhn length of round about 1 nanometer. If we now imagine this polymer to be present in a non-solvent environment, we can assume it to be fully collapsed into a dense spherical globule. This is illustrated to you in figure 32a of our script. And we can easily estimate the volume of that dense spherical globule, which is simply equal to the volume of all the monomer segments in the coil, which are densely collapsed into that object. The volume of one single monomer segment is roughly its length cube, and the volume of all the monomer segments together is this times the number of monomer segments. So the volume of this dense globule is nk times lk cube. Plugging in the numbers gives us a volume of that collapsed coil in that situation of about 60 cube nanometers. This corresponds to a linear dimension of about the cube root of that quantity, which is about 4 nanometers. Expressed as a formula, we can say that if the volume is nk times lk cube, the linear size of that object r is nk with the power of 1/3 times l. A different scenario that we can consider is the one visualized in figure 32b of our script. This is the situation where the coil has unperturbed ideal Gaussian random walk type statistics, that is, the theta state. We know that the linear size of this situation of the coil is expressed by the ideal scaling law that we know already, which is nk with the power of 1/2 times l. Plugging in the numbers from our example leads a linear size of about 7.5 nanometers. That means, compared to the fully collapsed situation in figure 32a of our script, the coil is about twice as large in terms of its linear size. An even better situation for the coil would be one where we have effective repulsive monomer-monomer interactions, which is the situation in a good solvent. There, we have a positive excluded volume, and so the coil volume is expanded compared to the theta state. It's described by a self-avoiding walk rather than a random walk. This is the situation visualized in figure 32c of our script. The scaling law of that situation is actually in the focus of this lesson unit. In a minute, we will follow an approach by Paul Flory to derive it. For our present comparative discussion, I foretake the final result already, according to which the coil size r is equal to nk with a power of 3 over 5 times l. Plugging in the numbers for the example we consider delivers a value of 11 nanometers. So once more, the coil is larger in size as compared to the theta, and of course as compared to the fully collapsed state. And in that situation, it has a size that is typical for colloidal scale objects, which is why polymers are a prime representative of soft colloidal matter. An extreme situation is the one visualized in figure 32D of our script. This is a coil with maximally strong repulsive effective monomer-monomer interactions, which we, for example, have in a polyelectrolyte that carries strong like charges at each monomeric repeating unit that strongly repel each other by Coulomb interactions. This coil has a tendency to fully expand to a stiff, linear, rod-like shape. We can easily estimate the size of this object. If all the monomer units arrange themselves like a linear rod, the size, therewith length of this rod, is simply the number of segments times the length of each segment, so nk times lk. We can also artificially but conceptually write this with a power law exponent at the end, as we had that in all the other equations before, which would then be the exponent of 1. Meaning there, the size of the coil R is equal to nk with a power of 1 times lk. Plugging in the numbers for our example denotes a value of 53 nanometers, 5 times as large as the coil in the good solvent situation. We see that better solvent quality leads to remarkable expansion of the polymer coil, starting from a few single nanometers to several tens of nanometers. And thereby note, these numbers correspond to the same polymer. It's always the same polyethylene with 50 units. We have not added further units or removed units. It's always the same given number of 50 units. But the same given number of 50 units has a different emphasis in the scaling law equations that we have discussed due to the differently high scaling law exponent on the n in the equation. As it is the same polymer, of course, if it expands more, this must come on cost of segmental density in the coil core. A coil in a good solvent that is expanded to larger total sizes occupies regions in the rim that are not occupied, or at least not to that extent occupied, by a coil that is not as expanded, for example, one in a theta solvent situation. As the total number of segments inside the coil volume is always constant, namely 50 in the example we consider, there must be a drop of the segmental density in the core then. This is visualized to you in figure 33 of our script. We can generalize all the equations that we have discussed so far to equation number 3.5 in our script. It says that the linear size dimension, here expressed in terms of the root mean square end-to-end distance of a real polymer coil in different solvency situation, scales with its number of segments with an exponent named nu times the length of each segment. The exponent nu is named Flory exponent. And that very exponent causes different coil sizes for different solvency situation, because a given number of end segments is empowered to different extent if that exponent has different values. In the numerical example we have considered before, it had values of 1/3 for the poor or non-solvent situation, 1/2 for the theta situation, 3/5 for the good solvent situation, and 1 for the extreme situation where the coil is fully expanded to a stiff rod. These different values have led us very different sizes of the coil in the previous example, varying from about only 4 nanometers in the fully collapsed state, over 7.5 in the ideal theta state, over 11 in the good solvent state, up to even 53 in the fully expanded state. That difference is of course even more pronounced if we have more segments in our coil. If we consider a polyethylene again, but now with not only 50 segments, but with 20,000 segments, that's the polymer we have considered several times already in numerical examples throughout this lecture, we get a number of Kuhn segments of about 2,900, and again a Kuhn length of about 1 nanometer. And with that, we get a fully collapsed state size of 15 nanometer, a theta situation size of 57 nanometers, a good solvent size of 127 nanometers, and a fully expanded size of 3080 nanometers. So here we see that whereas the polymer has sizes right in the colloidal domain at its typical theta or good solvent situations, in its fully expanded form, it would be much larger, with a size of actually 3 micrometers. This is a size you could see already under a standard optical microscope. In its natural state, however, the polymer is much smaller due to the heavy extent of coiling that it has in the good solvent and yet even more in the theta solvent state. After that conceptual insight, we have still not yet a justification for the scaling law exponent of 3/5 in the good solvent situation. In the discussion before, we have just taken it out of the blue sky, so to speak, but not yet clarified or justified it to us. The others we have justified to us. The exponent with 1/3 we could easily understand from the logical thought that the volume of a coil that is fully collapsed is n times l cube, and if we then just take the cube root out of this creates an exponent at the n of 1/3. The exponent of 1 half we know already from the random walk consideration of previous lesson units, and the one in the extremely expanded situation where n has a power law scaling of 1 is also clear to us, because in that situation the coil has the form of a stiff rod, meaning a line, and there the size, in other words the length of that line, is logically n times l, so we have an exponent of 1 at the n. The value of 3 over 5 in the situation that I have just skipped in my consideration, which is the good solvent situation, is not as intuitively clear to us, so we must make ourselves a mind how we can understand this. This can be done by following a theoretical concept introduced by Flory, referred to as the Flory theory of a polymer in a good solvent. In this theory, we aim to derive an expression for the size R of a polymer that is somehow larger than its ideal size R0, which we know is n with the power of 1 half times L. Footnote in this context, with n and L, I now mean Kuhn segments. So I'm ignoring the factor of C infinity that actually also appears in that equation. The starting point of the Flory theory is to estimate the number of monomers that are localized inside the excluded volume of a given first one. This is appraised according to equation 3.6 in our script. This equation reads VE, that's the excluded volume, times n over r cube. What is that? N is the number of segments inside our coil, and r cube is the volume of the coil, its linear size cube, a measure of the volume. So n over r cube is how many segments occupy the coil volume, or in other words, segmental density inside the coil. And if we now multiply the segmental density with a certain, let's say, probe volume of interest, which is the excluded volume, we obtain the number of how many segments are in the excluded volume. Ideally, that should be only one, namely the monomer that creates that excluded volume, and no other in the excluded volume, because that's the reason why we name it excluded volume. We can appraise that if, for any reason, there is a second or third or fourth monomer in the excluded volume of a given first one, that creates an energy penalty of kBT per such forbidden contact. That is formulated in equation 3.7 of the script. If we have only one monomer segment inside the excluded volume, namely the one that creates it, the energy outcome according to that formula will be kBT, and that's the thermal energy we can always have. So this is a situation that is always energetically given. If, however, we have two segments sitting in that excluded volume, then this comes along with an energy penalty of 2 times kBT, and that's an energy we don't have at thermal conditions. There we only have 1 kBT, but not 2. So there an energy penalty comes into play, due to the forbidden, or let's better say unfavorable contact, of more than one monomer segments inside the excluded volume of a given first one. If this is the case, what can the system do? Well, the thing that it must do is, it must spread apart the monomer units, such that the second one leaves the excluded volume of the first one. The way to do this is to expand the coil. Expanding the coil will minimize the energy given in equation 3.7. What we have estimated so far is the excluded volume energy per monomer. We can easily get to a variant expression for the excluded volume interaction energy for the entire chain. We just need to take the one we have had before n times. This is given to you in equation 3.8. That only differs from equation 3.7 by an additional factor of n. So the n in that equation occurs as an n square. Once more, we see that this energy is unfavorable, denoting a penalty. All the parameters in that equation are positive. So that means the whole thing, the whole energy, is positive. This is generally bad. Energy should always be small, most ideally negative. If we look through what parameters we have in there, then we have kB, that's a constant. We have T, that shall also be a fixed constant at isothermal conditions. We have the excluded volume, that's also a constant, that's given by the negative integral over the Lennard-Jones potential energy function, which is as it is for a given polymer. And we have the number of segments, that's also a constant. The only non-constant variable parameter in that equation is the parameter R, the coil size. As this occurs in the denominator of a ratio, increasing it will make the whole expression smaller, meaning more favorable. So again, here we see a coil expansion tendency. So we can conclude that increase of the coil volume, meaning expansion or swelling, will serve the system's desire to avoid monomer-monomer contact. However, we also know what also happens upon coil swelling, namely the occurrence of an entropy-based back-driving elastic force. That we can also express as an energy, as done in equation 3.9. We know that equation already from our lesson unit on entropy elasticity. Here, we also have a bunch of parameters that are all positive. So that elastic energy is positive, which is generally bad. energy shall always be small, ideally negative. Again, all the parameters occurring in that equation are constants, with one exception, r. R is a variable parameter. Here, however, the r occurs in the numerator of a ratio. That means here, making r small is favorable to minimize that energy contribution. So what this expresses is a coil contraction tendency. Overall, we have one tendency for coil expansion due to excluded volume interactions, and we have another tendency for coil contraction due to the occurrence of a restoring elastic force that comes along with coil expansion. Both are operative, so both must somehow find a compromise. How do we find that compromise? Well, we know that as both are operative, the total energy is given as the sum of both. And due to the very general deep fundamental principle of energy minimization in nature, what we must do now is we must take that total energy, which is the sum of the two contributions, and minimize it. Mathematically, we do that by setting its first derivative 0. This is done in equation 3.10, this is the one that expresses the sum, and equation 3.11 of the script. This is the one where the derivative is calculated and set 0. Rearrangement of that to the variable r gives us the most favorable r that serves both needs, in a form where we see in what way this variable in turn depends on parameters such as the number of segments and the length of each segment. And what we see here is that r scales with a number of segments with a power law exponent of 3 over 5. That's the quantity we wanted to derive, or justify, as we have foretaken it already in our earlier quantitative estimate in that lesson unit. So far, so good. This seems to be a satisfying result. However, if we have a detailed look, then we see that r now has a scaling with n with a power of 3 over 5, that's what we expect, but with l with a power of 2 over 5. This is contradictive. So far, r was always proportional to l, or l with a power of 1 if you want. So apparently here we find a wrong scaling law dependence of r as a function of l. Why is that? The reason is because we have made a mistake in our derivation. In equation 3.9, we have used the free energy formula for the chain entropy elasticity that we obtained for the case of ideal chains. This is seen by the ideal scaling expression n times l square for the mean square end-to-end distance in the denominator of the ratio in equation 3.9. What we are estimating here, however, is actually not the ideal chain, but by contrast, the real chain. So we're using an ideal chain formula to derive something about real chains. This is a mistake, and this mistake causes the mismatch in the result for the scaling law exponent of L. If that's the case then, however, why do we surprisingly get the correct scaling law exponent for N, namely 3 over 5? The reason is quite funny, because the mistake that we make there is compensated by another mistake we have made earlier. In the very first equation of this estimation, 3.6, we have estimated the segmental density inside the coil to be n over r cube. This denotes an equal homogeneous segmental density. We know, however, that the segmental density inside a coil is not equal and homogeneous. It is distributed according to a Gaussian. So actually, we should plug in the Gaussian formula here, and not that very easy homogeneous distribution of n over r cube. Funnily and luckily, these two mistakes compensate each other with respect to n, as n occurs in both of these incorrect formulas, 3.6 and 3.9. The mistake doesn't compensate for l, however, because l only occurs in one of these two incorrect formulas, namely 3.9. This cancelling of these two errors is a lucky coincidence that occurred to Flory when he first derived this. Later on, of course, there have been corrections of this by Flory himself and by others, and correct derivations, which are much more complicated mathematically, lead to a result that is not overly far away. According to the correct calculation, the scaling law exponent at the parameter n is not 3 over 5, that means 0.6, but actually 0.588 or 0.59, which is quite close to the 0.6 we have derived from the much simpler Flory estimate. With this theory, we have now justified to us the missing Flory exponent for the good solvent situation of 3 over 5, allowing us to express the root mean square size of a coil according to the general scaling law n with the power of nu times l, as denoted to you again in equation 3.13 of our script. The most relevant numbers for the Flory exponent are 1/2 for the theta state and 3 over 5 for the good or athermal solvent state. Other special case numbers are 1 for a fully expanded rod-like polymer chain and 1/3 for a fully collapsed globular polymer entity. These values are summarized to you underneath equation 3.13 in the script. We can actually do the Floret theory calculation also generally by using a variable parameter d for the geometrical dimension that has been 3 in our example that we have considered, but we can actually put this in as a variable d in equations 3.6 to 3.8, along with a further numerical factor d over 2 in equation 3.9. Doing this leads to a scaling law of the root mean square linear size of a coil as a function of n with a power of 3 over d plus 2, whereby d denotes the geometrical dimension. This is denoted here in equation 3.14. Let's discuss this for a minute. When we plug in d being 3, which is the usual three-dimensional case we have considered so far, we obtain a Floret exponent of 3 over 5, as we have just derived also. Plugging in a value of 2, meaning considering a polymer in a two-dimensional world, which could be a polymer, for example, restricted to a water-air interface or something like that, denotes a Floret exponent of 3 over 4. This value is larger than the 3 over 5 obtained for the three-dimensional situation. That means a coil with a given fixed number of segments n has a greater size in two dimensions than in three dimensions. Why is that? Because in two dimensions, there is less freedom for the polymer coil to arrange itself. And that means a greater coil expansion is necessary to avoid unfavorable monomer-monomer contacts. The situation is even exacerbated in one geometrical dimension. Here, the Floret exponent, according to equation 3.14, is 3 over 3, meaning 1. That means the scaling law for the coil size has then actually the form of the rod-like polymer. R is equal to n times L. And that makes perfect sense, because in one dimension, the only way for a coil to avoid monomer-monomer contact is to fully expand to a rod-like object. An interesting case is the hypothetic one for a four-dimensional scenario. If we plug in 4 for the d in equation 3.14, we obtain a Floret exponent of 3 over 6, meaning 1/2. That means in a four-dimensional space, the coil has its unperturbed Gaussian theta state conformation. Why is that? Well, because in four dimensions, the coil has so much geometrical freedom to arrange itself that unfavorable monomer-monomer contacts just don't occur. And that, in fact, allows the coil to adopt its ideal Gaussian random walk type conformations. We could conceptually discuss this further. For higher geometrical dimensions like 5 or 6 or 7, we would obtain even smaller Floret exponents like 3 over 7 or 3 over 8 or 3 over 9. That means a coil in such very high geometrical dimensions could actually even contract and thereby serving the entropy penalty needs to make the coil small without yet hurting the excluded volume condition. Again, this is possible because in higher and higher and higher geometrical dimensions, there is more and more and more geometrical liberty for the coil such that unfavorable monomer-monomer contact just doesn't occur, even if the coil is even contracted. A further form where the Floret exponent is written or replaced by a geometrical dimension term is the one denoted to you in equation 3.15. Here we have the root mean square linear size of the coil written as a power law of n with 1 over the fractal dimension of the coil, denoting the Floret exponent to be just the inverse of that quantity. When looking onto the compilation of Floret exponents that we have derived so far in the different geometrical dimensions, we see, as the fractal dimension is just the inverse of that, it gets lower and lower and lower as lower the geometrical dimension is. A smaller fractal dimension generally denotes an object to be less dense. That's something we have seen already in our third lesson unit. That means in smaller geometrical dimensions, coils have a smaller fractal dimension, thereby being denoted to be less dense, which again makes sense because, as we have just seen, in smaller geometrical dimensions, the smaller geometrical liberty forces the coils to expand more, which renders them less dense. An interesting special case, by the way, is the case of a fully collapsed globule polymer in a non-solvent. Here we have a Floret exponent of 1 over 3, meaning a fractal dimension that's the inverse of that, which is 3. So here, the fractal dimension is actually equal to the true geometrical dimension. This makes sense. A fully collapsed globule is not a fuzzy fractal object, but an actual solid object. And in those objects, the fractal dimension as such doesn't exist, or it matches with its common geometrical dimension. What we have achieved so far is a description for the shape of real polymer coils. We have seen in good and athermal solvents, they are expanded compared to their ideal state to a degree that is given to us by the general scaling equation with a Floret exponent. Our overall goal of this lecture is to translate structure information into property information. We have done so already for ideal chains in our third lesson unit by deriving information on their mechanics, namely their entropy-based chain elasticity. We now want to do so also for real chains, and an elegant approach to do so is one that we got to know already in the ideal chain discussion, which is the scaling discussion approach. Again, it relies on the premise that the same general scaling law, which here reads that the radius Rf, which means Flory radius, is equal to n with the power of 3 over 5 times L, applies to the chain as a whole and to subsections of it. This is expressed to you in equation 3.16b and 3.18b of the script, whereas the respective sister equations 3.16a and 3.18a express the same for the ideal chain situation. Again, just like in the ideal chain discussion, the clue point of the derivation is to conceptualize the actual chain to be composed not of actual monomeric units, but of conceptual units named blobs, and to choose the blob size such that any external deformation energy is screened by the thermal noise on length scales smaller than the blob size, such that the shape of the chain on larger scales can be described as a unidirectional sequence of blobs. And thereby, the stretched size of the coil is just the number of blobs times the blob size. Juggling with the equations a little, which is skipped in our script, if you're interested in that, you can read this in full detail in the accompanying lecture textbook, Physical Chemistry of Polymers, A Conceptual Introduction, denotes as an equation pair for the force as a function of the stretching extent, as given in equation 3.22a and 3.22b for the ideal and the real polymer chain. A graphical visualization of those can be found in figure 36 of our script. What we see here is that at application of the same force to both these chains, the real chain is always larger than the ideal chain because it is always pre-stretched to some extent by its inherent expansion tendency. That again causes a steeper increase of the force upon stretching to make sure that both curves coincide at the point where both the ideal and the real chain are stretched to full extent. With that, we're at the end of this lesson unit. It has delivered to us a mathematical scaling law for the size of a real polymer chain. A central parameter in that is the Flory exponent, which expresses the extent of empowerment of the number of segments in that law. The greater this extent is, the more does a coil with a given fixed number of segments expand in a solvent with positive excluded volume. The most relevant numerical value for that power law exponent for the good or athermal solvent situation, which are the most relevant ones for polymer experimentalists, is 3 over 5, as we have obtained in that lesson unit by a Flory theory discussion. This Flory theory concept that we have learned is actually very versatile. It allows us to estimate much more situations. One variant we have indicated already, that would be the one where we do it in general in D dimensions and not specifically in 3 dimensions. What we could also do in the very same theory is to estimate the size of polymers that are subject to interactions other than only the excluded volume interactions. For example, charged polyelectrolytes that carry like charges at each monomeric repeating unit that repel each other by Coulomb forces. The way to account for that would simply be to add a third, a Coulomb term, to the sum of the free energies and then differentiate it to R, set this 0, and rearrange it for R. Actually, for the sake of simplicity in that case, we could even leave away the excluded volume term because the Coulomb interaction can be expected to be much stronger than the excluded volume interactions. So what we only have to account for here practically is the Coulomb term and the elastic energy term. We see already that the Flory theory is a very versatile tool to appraise scaling laws for real polymer chains. I do not want to say that this will definitely be featured in the written exam at the end of this semester. But I can tell you that much. So far, it has always been featured in the exam. In that sense, I wish you that your polymer statistical estimates will always be correct. Or at least, that errors in that balance each other. Which turned out to be not too bad for Paul Flory himself, who, by the way, later became a Nobel Prize laureate. Later on, of course, Flory self-critically took up that mistake and corrected it, just in line to a quote ascribed to Confucius that says, "Who has committed a mistake and doesn't correct it is committing another mistake." In that sense, I wish that you always keep your errors limited, not only in polymer science.